The Team Never Quit podcast is proudly brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. Navy Federal offers exclusive benefits to all of their members, so go check out what they have at NavyFederal.org.
And it takes a lot of, like, just bad work. You know, it takes a lot of bad work. You got to get knocked down, and you got to be really patient with the process. Because sometimes, too, like, a really good painting will look really bad for a long time before you can kind of polish it up and actually make it into something beautiful.
Never quit radio. All right, everybody, welcome back to the TNQ podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Team Never Quit podcast. As always, thank you guys so much for listening and watching, and please don't forget to hit that like and subscribe button wherever you're getting this show. So today, before we hop into our really awesome guest, let's kick it off with our weekly Patreon question. And this week we've got, what is something you've done recently that really surprised or impressed you?
I just got back from a course at Oxford.
You went to a course at Oxford?
Yeah.
Is that what you were doing there?
Yeah. It was like a mini, like a conference type thing with a bunch of courses that you could take. I don't even have my bachelor's degree. So for me to just go there and do that, I felt very smart just being there. Yeah. That surprised me. That was something I didn't think I would ever do in my life.
That was pretty sweet.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
What about you?
Dang, something I did that impressed me. I impressed myself?
Yeah, surprised yourself.
Oh, I surprised myself with, golly. I don't know. I learned how to throw a 12-foot cast net off a moving boat while my wife was driving it. That was the fact that I taught my wife how to drive a boat and I could throw a big cast net off the front of it without falling in was pretty good. We've been doing a lot of shrimping in Charleston recently.
Oh, that's so cool.
How's that?
The white shrimp, dude, so good. It's so fun. If you come out.
Well, we will
come
now.
Out to Charleston, man.
Yeah, cool. We
got
that.
Some good shrimp.
Throw out the invite. We'll be there.
Yeah, it's something we just, you know, we have friends that can do it and have invited us out to do it. But it was just like, let's just go out and try to figure it out ourselves. So I'm out there like everything I do with an iPhone and a giant cast net trying to learn how to throw a big old cast net off the front of a boat. And it worked out. We got a lot of shrimp.
Because there's some technique that goes in that.
There is. Yeah. It's like this, all these folds and you know, yeah. Tangles, and it's a mess. But yeah.
To see somebody, I'll get on YouTube every now and again and watch them doing that,
mm-hmm.
like the big ones.
Yeah.
Spin
yeah,
it like,
that's
a,
right.
like a
yep.
spider web.
Yep.
It's that's impressive.
Right. It's hard, especially when your wife's driving the boat.
Yeah.
What about you?
I mean, most recently, probably the real estate exam.
Ooh.
Yeah. Last night, he passed the Texas real estate exam.
That's awesome. Congrats, man.
Appreciate
good
it.
Good stuff.
It's a good one. Been a while since I've been in the school game, so it's nice to get back in. And
you got to learn how to study. That's a habit. It's a perishable skill.
And it's definitely perishable. It's really hard to kind of get your headspace in that memorization game.
Mm-hmm.
That's really tough.
So I guess mine would be my wife got to go to Oxford, my son became a real estate agent, and I had the kids for a week and no one
died. You survived. No stitches, no hospital visits.
I got
everybody
lived. Every day on time.
That's it.
You know, and the house didn't come down. It was, it was glorious.
Made it to the volleyball games.
Yeah, I got all the I hit all the sports games,
oh, dude,
did sweet. Everything, and then kept up with my chores.
Your kids are all playing sports right now?
They are.
Yes. Yeah. Addie's in volleyball.
She's in volleyball.
Axes and boxing.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah, as soon as he hit 14,
okay.
I took him straight down to the MMA gym.
Sweet. Get him a
I make sure he can speak another language, so he can speak Spanish,
okay.
and that he can defend himself.
Yeah.
And then when he leaves out of here to go to college, I'm comfortable with that.
Yeah, that's right.
And you took Hunter golfing and your brother. You did a lot while I was gone.
Yeah, we got nice. to
Yeah, shot five under.
I behaved myself.
Yeah, you were well behaved. It sounds like you did, I mean, you did a lot better than I did last week.
The best thing I did, I behaved
that's
myself.
That's for sure. Golly, that's always a task when mom leaves.
Oh, man.
It's like, dude, here we go. I'm cool.
Boss is away. Just,
and then they get back and they're like, it's fine. It's easy. Fine.
Like she would ask every night, how was it?
Yeah, yeah.
It's fine. It's fine.
Dude, this
it's
is
fine.
Easy.
Complete chaos, but
that's it. That's sick, man. I got my kids in wrestling. Okay,
yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
That's
they,
a great
they have
base.
A really cool program in Charleston. It's like high schoolers down to like littles.
Perfect.
And they'll swap out. So the kids get to see the old kids just roughing each other up. And you get like a little bit of that peer pressure from those older guys watching you. They're acting a lot tougher than they normally would if something bad happened. And it's just a cool environment to get
all the
to get them
guys
in
I
the
talk
room.
To, that they say that's a great. That's the best base.
Yeah, it's great. Wrestling is a good start. When I was an instructor, a lot of wrestlers did really well at Buds.
Was that right?
Wrestlers, rugby guys.
Yeah.
Kind of like that whole world of kind of sports.
Frickin'
they did
stamina.
Pretty good. Yeah. Yeah, and then, you know, there's the dudes that are like the CrossFit pros that don't make it and pro swimmers that don't make it.
Gymnasts.
Or whatever. It's all over the place.
All
man.
Over the place.
Yeah. When we were there, they had like scientists, you know, that were writing their doctorates or whatever on what
who could do what
yeah, you know, and it's like good luck, man. Nobody's gonna figure
if
that
out. If you find that out,
I know
that's the golden
ticket. It's $1 million
right there.
That's it,
if you can
man.
Figure out what that formula
what injection is. You can give a kid like the moon has to be at the right phase and you have to dip your child's toes in the salt water of the Pacific at the time.
I like asking this question. Anyways, we'll go ahead and get into it. What do you think it is?
I don't know. My brother went through Buds with me and he quit. So I don't know what it is, man. Every time somebody's like, what does it? I don't know. Because you and your brother, you both.
I don't know, but I can't give you an answer. I think sense of humor.
Yeah.
I think you have to at least have that component.
Yeah. There's definitely a sense of humor. I always say if you want to be a Navy SEAL, you'll make it.
Be one.
You're going to be a Navy SEAL.
I also feel like you have to be okay with getting yelled at. And it not screwing with your mental. Like some people, when they get yelled at, it destroys them on the inside. For instance, when y'all have to do your helmets or clean your room or whatever, and then you do it perfectly, and then the instructors go in and mess everything up, and they're like, "Oh, it's not clean." That kind of thing that can really screw with somebody. So you have to have that mental, like, okay, I'm just going to keep doing it. I know what I'm doing is right, but I'm going to keep taking the yelling.
Yeah, I don't know. The yelling thing, it wasn't such a big deal. Because you go to boot camp, that's where it all starts. They start yelling at you. And then, honestly, boot camp was probably the biggest culture shock for me. Just because it's a completely different environment than I've ever been in. That was like the first time I was on lockdown. In my life, I was a free range feral child, you know, as a kid, traveling all over the world. And now I'm like stuck in this little room with 100 and something other dudes and these guys yelling at me. And, you know, it was a huge culture shock moment for me. But as soon as I got over that, you know, I'm like, all right, this is just I have to be a sailor before I can be a SEAL.
All right. Well, let's back this up then. Where'd you come from?
Where am I from? That's a good question. I was born in a military family, so.
Oh, you're a brat.
I'm GI, general issue from birth, man, Fort Rucker, Alabama. My dad was a Huey pilot. He flew in Desert Storm, Desert Shield, Just Cause in Panama. He flew some soft guys into Panama. Yeah, and so he was doing that. We were bouncing around a lot as young kids. And then he had a hard landing and got medically separated after like 8 or 9 years. And he had always felt kind of called into the mission field. And so I was 8 years old and my parents packed us all up and we went to Southeast Asia as missionary kids, Christian missionaries. And so I grew up all overseas, man, all over Southeast Asia primarily. But then I didn't move back to the States officially till I was 18 for college. So yeah, I'm from all over places.
The only other person that I know that went to Southeast Asia as a missionary kid is my cousin.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Where?
She was in China.
Okay.
And Vietnam and Malaysia.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
Sounds very similar
to
my childhood.
Southeast Asia.
I lived in Malaysia for a good bit of time. I think like 2.5 years or three years. And then my wife and I met in Thailand. I graduated from high school in Thailand.
Thai?
What's that? Do I speak Thai?
Yeah.
You talk Thai? Jack talk Thai real good. Thai? I speak a little bit, enough to get like, you know, to the airport and around. No, she was a missionary to India. And so her family was in and out of Thailand and in India primarily.
So they've been there. I haven't been there yet.
Thailand's sick, dude.
I heard it's great.
Thailand's sick. That's the first place I ever heard about what a Navy SEAL was. Because I was in Malaysia. That's when, you know, 9/11 happened for us. And we took trips to Thailand like all the time. You can practice your whatever religion there. And so they'd have like conferences and stuff for missionaries and people would come in. But I remember my mom was on the beach and the Marines were coming in. We were at like Pattaya, Thailand, which is like a no-go spot. Don't recommend it. But there was a bunch of Marines on R&R. And my mom was talking to some other lady and she was asking what one of the guys wanted to do for when he graduated high school. And she's like, oh, he wants to be a SEAL. And I was like, what is a SEAL? You know, like I have no idea what that was. I was probably, goodness, like freshman or sophomore in high school at that point. So I had no idea, you know, any of this stuff. And she's like, oh, they're very, very hard job to get in the military. And I was like, put that in the back of my brain. Because my dad, he always wanted us, he thought it would be important for us to serve at some point. My grandfather was in the Navy. We can track our, you know, long line of service in our family. And so I knew I wanted to serve at some capacity. I just didn't know what that would look like until, you know, I start reading some stories.
That's what got you?
Yeah, I'd say I grew up in Asia. And so I also knew about special forces. And so that mission set seemed really familiar to me because I was already, you know, running around the mountains and kind of working with indigenous people and kind of sneaking around as a missionary. And special forces just seemed, and my dad was in the Army, so there was a kind of like that connection. And so that seemed like just a natural direction for me to go. And then my buddy, I came back to the States and I'm on a break in college or something. He's like, you need to read this book, Lone Survivor. And I'm like, oh, I'll check that out. You know, and he's like, it's in my, you know, in the trunk somewhere. And I rip it out. I brought it. I still have the book. So I read this book. I'm like, dude, this is a different machine. You know, these guys are a different caliber altogether and their mission sets. Incredible. Like, this is incredible. And so then I started, you know, going down the rabbit hole. I think there was like two books. It was like you and Dick Couch's book. Mm-hmm. And then there was like the 234 documentary, I think. And I remember just binge watching that.
And did you know that Dick Couch's book actually was his Buds class?
No, I did not know that.
Yeah, 228.
Are you kidding me?
So yeah.
He wrote that on our class. Stop it. And then.
How did I not know that?
And then there's the picture book, To Be a Navy SEAL, is about our class. And then the finishing school is about my brother's class.
Mm-hmm. Dude, get out of here.
Can you believe that?
And you guys got the whole, like, yeah, you got your whole career plot, there. Like, everything plotted out.
And then the Hollywood
all
class.
All the fact checkers.
Yeah, 234, the Hollywood, like, yeah, right?
That's, like, hey, man, he said it too. I'm not lying. Yeah.
Right there,
it was hard, hardest Buds class ever. It says right there.
Yeah, man, that's Warrior crazy. Elite was the name of that.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. So I read that, and I did college ROTC. For really? A little bit of time. I went to Liberty University in Virginia.
Good for you, man.
Yeah, they have a really cool program for missionary families. My parents were making like nothing, and so, you know, they give a pretty nice scholarship to people whose families are still serving overseas so they can get a college education. And so I was on a college scholarship for a little bit, and then my parents left the mission field when I was in the university, and I started going into debt. And I was like, man, I'm going to join anyway. I just need to do something. I just need to do it. And I did ROTC for a little bit, trying to figure out the officer route. And I remember, you know, you go in the first day and it's kind of cheesy. They're like, tell us why you want to serve. And one person's like, oh, it's a great opportunity and future jobs afterwards. A good way for me to get job experience. And another person's like, well, the university's free and they pay for my college. And then, you know, some other person's giving some other excuse. And I'm like looking around the room thinking, where are the people that want to kill bad guys and save good people, you know, like that's what where are those people at? And so I was thinking, man, whatever is going to be the hardest thing to do in the military, wherever that realm is, those are the people that want to be in those jobs like the most, you know? And so that's got to be like where my people are at. And so I said, what's the hardest thing to do in the military? And no brainer, SEAL, you know, buds training is hands down, I think, the hardest. So dropped out of college, went down to Charlotte and started training. I was a whitewater raft guide in the summers. And so I worked at the U.S. National Whitewater Center there as a whitewater raft guide. And then I was training for a bit. And I was like, oh, I'm still talk to the special forces recruiter and figure that out and see if it's still something I'm interested in. And I went in. The Army recruiter was on the right and the Navy was on the left and the Army office was closed and the rest is history, man. So I took a left turn and
that's a God thing.
And started absolutely. You
know how many guys I'm like, hey man, this one, the door was locked.
So literally the door was closed. That one. That's right. That's right. Yeah.
Plenty of dudes say that.
That's right, man. And my brother was he wanted to go talk to the Navy recruiter as well. He was looking at some officer routes because he had already graduated. He was really interested in the intel route and like applying for the agency at some point. Yeah. But they weren't really hiring kids straight out of college. They wanted some kind of military experience. Right away. And so, you know, the recruiter.
That's kind of like the junior college for the agency.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Get in the military, do some stuff in there, they'll find you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then with being, I was like, why do you want to be an officer? Keep the enlisted man down. What do you think?
So somebody's got to humble him.
Yeah, somebody's got to keep him down.
That's it. So yeah, long story short, my brother and I both ended up with SO contracts and joining the Navy at the same time, going to boot camp together.
Older or younger?
He's older, 2 years older.
Check.
Yeah, and then we kind of started our whole buds adventure.
Were y'all in buds together?
Yeah, same class.
What class was that?
290 at first.
290, really? Oh, nice, man.
290,
So what year is this?
Okay, so I started training in like 2010. I went to boot camp in 2011, February 2011. But what's crazy is I remember it was like the first time we met, I was in Auburn, Alabama, and my brother and I were hanging out with some friends or something. We were traveling, home is Alabama. So we were walking down the road somewhere in Alabama and I see the sign. It's like Marcus Luttrell speaking at SWAT event, you know, 8 p.m. And I'm like, that's right now. And we walk down, it's like this little public square and you're speaking at some SWAT event and we creep into the back room and we watch you talk and you kind of share your whole story. And it was like 2 months, 3 months before we enlist or, you know, shipped out to boot camp and you like kind of finish your talk, book it out of the room. And we're like, Mr. Luttrell, we're going to Buds in February, you know? And you're like, all right, don't quit. See you later. You know? And,
yeah, that's what you're supposed to say.
That's what you're supposed to say. Don't quit. See you later. And man, that was the first time we ever met.
How?
I remember that.
No way.
Yep. I remember that talk with the SWAT in the open. That park's the only one that done like
that's
that.
That's right. Yeah. Cool. Yeah, that's wild, sure. Man. It was crazy. It was just happenstance. It, to me, it's kind of like one of those divine, you know, checkpoints, just like one of those assurances God gives you just to like put a little fire in your gut and motivate you before you go. And I mean, you're a huge reason, your story and the story of all those guys are a huge reason why I ended up serving. And it was just a huge blessing to have that in person right before
that happened to me. Left, man. With Mike Thornton.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Ran to him.
Yeah.
He's like, don't quit. If I was an instructor, I'd make you quit. Yeah. That's what he said. Yeah, yeah. Gave me a little bit more, actually. Right. He's like, you're probably not going to, you know, that whole thing.
Yeah, totally.
Thank you, sir.
Appreciate it.
Appreciate you.
Yeah. I got our buds class. It was like, it was a summer class.
Oh, your summer?
Yeah, it was a summer class for our hell week. But it was one of those things where, you know, there's always animosity towards people who have warmer classes. But
for me, beat harder.
Yeah, it is hot. But, you know, if it was colder, I wouldn't have quit anyway. So it doesn't matter.
So 2011. At Buds, and then you see him again.
Yeah, so I got rolled out of in second phase. I had a tibial stress fracture on my left leg, and it's like 8 centimeters. And
nice.
Yeah, it was a big one.
A good one.
And so it took me a while to recover from it. So I rolled out.
Was it double
roll? Yeah, I was like 9-0 into 9-3.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
so it was a long roll. So I worked a couple of weeks as a brown shirt.
You're a brown shirt rollback.
Yeah, I was a brown shirt rollback for a long time, and that is not. It's a better than being a white shirt rollback. Oh, that's for sure, dude. Oh. That is just the danger zone. Talk about, but and then you came in and talked to our class 9-3, and I was in the back. We were like a bunch of little cockroaches hiding
on the beach
in the dark.
Or on the class.
What's that?
Was it in the classroom?
When you talked?
Yeah.
Dude, I remember the talk that I heard. You may have talked a couple times, but when I heard it was poolside at the CCT.
Yeah.
Okay, nighttime. Check. I think it was like evening. Night. We were all hiding in the back.
Right on. The second phase, I got rolled out of second phase.
Did you?
Yep.
What was your role?
I broke my femur during the monster mash.
Dude, that's right.
And my pelvis. And then I got rolled out.
Brutal.
Yeah.
Brutal.
Brown shirt rollback. I was there, bro.
I would much rather do a med roll than a performance roll, though. Like,
oh, you get some special attention.
Yeah. Performance. I mean, and there's always just like this huge hit to a certain extent, you know, it's good to be humbled every now and then.
You ever see the guy get rolled back for not putting out? Like a piece of shit rollback?
Dude, nowadays they're like chitting them and they're dropping them from the program now. The instructors have gotten pretty good at like documenting those dudes.
Yeah, because that's our guys. Those instructors, that's our generation, man.
Yeah,
that's right. Shit.
That's right, man. Yeah, and yeah, we've gotten to the point now where it's like, all right, there's enough guys coming through. We start seeing, because there is a mentality, there's to a certain extent, it is important that you come in and you don't quit, but that doesn't mean you don't put out. Like, you also have to perform. You know, so I think one of the biggest misconceptions of buds is like, you can't just show up and not quit. You know, you still have to be a good team guy. You still have to do the work. You have to put in the job, you know, and be a performer. Like, you got to be a pro. We're looking for the whole man here in the SEAL teams. And if you're not meeting the standard, man, you're gone.
It's freaking evolved.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, obviously, like, don't quit is... Buds is famous for being probably the last crucible on earth, where if you show up and you do the work, you're going to get the reward at the end. If you do not, then you cannot get the Budweiser, as
the Budweiser
Carney would say.
I still stare at that damn thing, man. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. I remember, I don't know if your experience, when you first get binned, you kind of like take it off and you're like, I don't deserve this.
I couldn't believe it.
I don't deserve it. Like, this is not real. And it was that way too when I put on the blue shirt as an instructor. I was like, this feels weird.
Yeah, I bet.
This feels really weird.
I bet. So what was your toughest going through training? What got you in buds?
Buds? Dude, the hardest part of buds for me.
Like, where you're like, fuck
this. There's a couple rough, like, physical evolutions, I guess, or like mental evolutions. But like, my brother quitting was my biggest crucible. Because he quit like Wednesday the first week. And yeah, as a missionary kid, I always had my family with me. For the most part, we were really, really close. I was always moving. So family was just the only touch point that I had. And, you know, the fact that we got to go through boot camp together and just at the end of every day, it's like debrief, like, dude, this is way more gay than we thought it was going to be. This is way dumber than we thought it was going to be, you know. And we always just could, like, he was always a confident, a person you could confide in. And, when he quit on Wednesday, I was like, that's gone.
Well, got it.
Okay, so and this is maybe the second hardest part of buds for me was, you know, every night before buds or when you're done with the day, you always have like your cleaners, your sweepers, you got all your gear you have to clean. You got to clean the boats, get everything ready. We'll take out the trash in the instructor's office, and two guys were seen walking, carrying trash to the dumpster, and one of the instructors whips out on his little beach cruiser and he's like, caught two guys walking. Tonight you will write, I will not walk while at basic underwater demolition school 1,000 times each. You know, so every single student in the class had to write, I will not walk while at basic underwater demolition school all night long, dude, 1,000 times. And so you finish your duty and then you go back, you take care of all your team gear, your personal gear. And then all night long, we were writing, I will not walk while I'm basic underwater demolition school. And, you know, I taped like four pins together and I'm like writing them out in the lines. And I like, I wrote all
brilliant
night long.
Idea, by the way.
Dude, brutal, brutal punishment. And I got like 15 minutes of sleep that night because I finished the task and a lot of guys didn't. My brother was one of them. And, so he didn't finish his thing, and but he stayed up late trying to finish it, and it was just a long night. We went into the swim the next day, and I guess it just got into his head, and he's like, man, this isn't the end goal for me, as far as, you know, I don't need to be a SEAL to do what I want to do ultimately. And I was like, dude, I get it, man. Like, this sucks, you know. But I was like, I'm going to hang out for one more evolution, you know, and see what happens after swim. Cause we thought we were going to fail this swim. He was my swim buddy. He's like a foot shorter than me. And the instructors thought it was funny that like we had to swim together, Hughes, you know? And so we finished the swim. The instructor was like, if you didn't finish your writing assignment, it doesn't matter if you passed, check in, you know, over here. And so those guys were getting a little bit of extra buds over there. And I was like, see you later, man. You know, I'll see you at the end of the day. And he ended up ringing out and I hung out. What's crazy is the guys that didn't finish that writing assignment Saturday of Hell Week, if they hadn't finished it, they had to go into the classroom and they had to write out, I will not walk while at basic underwater demolition school. It's just like those little mind games.
Dude.
So it's like, that was one of the hardest things for me mentally. It was just like, dude, all night long writing this down. And then physical evolution, probably, dude, boats on heads is very underrated in buds. Running around with that freaking boat on your head, just smashing your
chow
spine
runs.
Is rough. Yeah. You know, the, what do they call them? Drag races where, you know, every time they pair you up with another boat crew and you guys have to race each other. And after so many, the instructors start securing you. But our Hell Week, we had to run our boats all the way down to IB. And we spent the first 2 days of Hell Week in IB. And I think that for me, like, it was like 7.5 miles running with a boat on your head. And it was brutal.
It is.
It was brutal. But I was so glad when we were done with boats, man.
I guess some guys too.
Oh yeah, it
hurts.
Oh, dude. I mean, that's like, I think boat ducker is the ultimate insult in the SEAL teams. You know, if somebody calls you a boat ducker, it's them fighting words.
You don't want that tag at all.
Yeah, that's it. So I think that was probably physically the hardest evolution. What was it? What was it for you? Was there something that stands out the most?
Second phase is a beatdown.
Dude, yeah.
It was a freaking beatdown, man. Yeah. Our instructors were awesome at beating you down.
Mm-hmm.
And there's that nonstop messing with you. Hey, at the end of the day, you got to write this out. You freaking 1,008 counts through the night. Or
yeah.
Then you wake up in the morning and constantly the diving and booty. That's your life, right? You mm-hmm. live in the shorts and the booties, right. Eating out of MRE for freaking eight to 10 weeks, deck, whatever it was. And like third phase was okay.
Yeah.
And then first phase was too.
First phase was okay?
Yeah, it was okay.
Because
I had a great class.
That's sick.
Boat crew one, they're a freaking bunch of beasts.
Yeah.
All the guys are solid. Some of them are dead now. I had a great buds class.
That's
good. I mean, I had a freaking exceptional buds class.
In performance or attitude?
Both.
Okay, sick. See,
we loved each other.
Yeah.
Like, we actually got along, man, and hung out outside of buds. And,
okay, cool.
And we did. Yeah, we weren't very many of us.
Yeah.
And so that you couldn't get to us like that. And they tried.
You know, out here, life runs on community. Neighbors helping neighbors, showing up when it counts. And that's exactly what our friends at Tractor Supply are all about. At the heart of every strong community are the people who serve, our veterans, active duty military, first responders, and the families who stand right beside them. These are the folks who protect, sacrifice, and keep life out here moving forward. And Tractor Supply gets that. That's why they created Hometown Heroes Program, just a way to show real appreciation beyond just words. It's packed with meaningful, everyday benefits through their Neighbors Club, just like 2% back on every purchase, free trailer rentals and same-day delivery twice per quarter, and quarterly 5% off coupons. And just when you thought that was enough, they also have special discounts on hero holidays like Veterans Day and First Responders Day. Once you verify your status through ID.me, the perks apply automatically. No hoops, no hassle. We're in Tractor Supply literally all the time, grabbing cattle cubes, chicken feed, and even food for the pups. It's always felt more like a community than a store, and that's what makes it feel so special. If you or someone you love is a hometown hero, go visit tractorsupply.com/hometownheroes and get signed up today. It's Tractor Supply's way of standing right behind those who stand for us. Again, that is tractorsupply.com/hometownheroes.
Yeah, there's always like you can kind of tell that every class has like a little flavor to it, because sometimes you get beat so bad you're just like a hurt dog, and you're just terrified all the time because you have major hydrophobia, especially after Hell Week. You're like, do not get wet, anything to not touch the water again, you know. And we're doing that for the rest of our lives, and and then other classes really kind of embrace it, and they have a little bit of attitude, and usually it's harder for them, but it's a lot more fun. You know, and it's more fun for the instructor staff too, because we like a little bit of, you know, we like a little spice. You know, it's nice to have some personality in the class that keeps you kind of laughing.
Oh, dude, I know what it was. We got jocked up in second phase.
Oh, dude, you guys got jocked up.
We got jocked up, and we had to do the crawl.
Yeah. With your
280s. Yeah,
280s. Yeah,
that's probably the hardest thing.
Yeah, we got a class jocked up when we were in there. That does not happen very often. Yeah, that is rough.
What does that mean?
Dude, you get these kind of difficult big old 280 like backpack
scuba tanks.
And then you have your weight belt. It's like 14 pounds, and and your fins around your wrist, and you bear crawl to the demo pits, which is like a mile and a half. Or
freaking blood trail all the way through the compound.
It is brutal.
And then you're on your knees, and you got to take the tanks off of the top. You got to ditch and don them.
Mm-hmm.
And those horns, the manifold equipment, smack you in the back of the head, dude.
Yep.
And just knock the piss out of you. And then the push-ups with the soda sorb carries.
That's right.
The bucket carries up the dive tower.
Yeah. We didn't have the dive tower.
Oh, right.
Dudes are still carrying tanks and up the deal. You know, doing all that stuff. But that's funny. I think second phase is a very well-kept secret.
100%.
And then third phase is the place where, like, they can't. Nobody can hear you scream.
They can't hear you scream. That's etched into a rock.
Yeah. Yeah.
Welcome. This is a place where they can't hear you scream.
That's right. And what they don't tell you is like the SEAL teams are training out there too. Yeah. So they're always watching and being sneaky too, trying to mess with students.
Dude, you have a second phase because it's tucked back in there in the back. And nobody goes back in there. Yeah. I never even saw the skipper. He was just like, just didn't come back there.
Yeah, and like second phase, the dives can run really, really late at night. Ugh. And you'll get back and nobody's around. It's just quiet. And I lived in Coronado for that time. And, you know, the guys would be like, this class sucks. You know, I need some dudes. And I'll be like, be right there. You know, so I just ride my little skateboard into work and help out.
Yeah.
Help
do some instructing. So when you graduated, did your brother come?
Oh, yeah, he did. He did come to graduation. It was awesome.
How was that? Cool. Was he?
It's good. No, it's good. I mean, he's one of those dudes that just owned it. You know, like, it's not for me. You know, this was not a program for me. It was a cool experience. He loved, you know, we still talk about some of the stories for this short time that he was there. Yeah, really, really close. And, but, you know, it's just, I went my way and he went his way. And then he ended up he stayed in the Navy for a couple of years. Now he's an Army chaplain. He's stationed out in Germany.
Oh, nice. Cool.
So, yeah, that's now he's awesome, an Army chaplain. Yeah. My dad went back in too. He was an Army chaplain. So he ended up retiring out as a chaplain. And so they both did that thing. And then
that's cool, man. That's an honorable profession.
Yeah, it's cool.
That's so cool.
It is.
So what team did you go to?
I went to Team 5.
Oh.
The best team.
Best team.
It is a great team. Dude, when I first showed up.
Hands down, the best.
Dude, it is. I love Team 5, man. I was so glad to get orders there. When I first showed up, I went in and I saw like some locker. You know, there's like the dermo bin where dudes throw away old stuff and trashed uniforms and stuff. And there's like this old locker. It says Latrell on it. I was like, was your brother there too? Oh, your brother went to Team 5 too?
Yeah,
both
of us. That's where they stuck us after I got back.
Okay, nice.
For sure.
So yeah, dude, I love Team 5, man. I love.
Did you find anything good in it?
What do you mean? No, it was just an empty, busted up locker. I thought about keeping it just for like, you know, historical landmark.
So for people who don't understand, but, like when guys are getting, there's a bin for guys to turn in a bunch of gear if you want to get rid of it. If you got some new stuff.
You're talking about like the, like a trunk locker.
Yeah, it was like a metal locker.
Yeah.
And metal bin. When you get out, everyone knows you're getting out. And they'll come pilfer your shit.
Yeah.
No one can steal like a team guy.
New guys. They're like little rats.
The new guys are the worst about it.
Treasure.
I didn't even tell anybody I was getting out yet. I come back to my locker, everything's gone.
Yeah, that's
right.
I'm
like, hey, hey, I'm still here, man.
That's right, dude. Yeah.
But that's the best. When you go in there and as a new guy, you just, because you want everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like Christmas, man. Being in SEAL teams, if you're that kind of guy, the gear issue, when you hear that came, that's in.
Yeah.
Like when supplies, like, hey, mm-hmm. you guys got some new stuff. You're like, yep. oh.
Dude.
And then you want
you'll
two
drop
of it.
Everything.
Everything. You'll drop everything you're doing like, to oh, go
new,
in there to
new
see
pants.
New pants.
New
boots. What is this?
New watch? Yeah, this, oh, the swag dude. Is
five is the best.
The swag
man.
Gene is strong and
it's
in the
quite
SEAL
strong.
Teams.
Like when people treasure. Always ask me like, "Hey man, were you at six?" I'm like, "No, I only made it to five."
Yeah, I like that. I'm gonna have to use
yeah,
that.
Use that.
I'll
it's
use
good,
that
man.
One. That's good. But yeah, I did. I was at team five and great group of guys. I had an awesome platoon. Just older guys were the kind of dudes that weren't playing, you know, fuck games and. They wanted our platoon to be the best at team five. And so whatever our weaknesses were, they're like, we're going to get you up to speed and make sure that you're up to standard. So they put in the work with us, got us in the house early and, you know, started kind of giving us the expectations right off the bat of what they expected. And we had a great group of new guys, great platoon.
Love that.
Good for you, man.
Yeah, it was a blessing.
They're good about that. It's like when you're there, you're busting your ass.
Yeah.
They send you everywhere.
Yeah.
But they play hard. And
yeah, they
do. That was the cool part.
Yeah. And I mean, you get platoons too that do like the new guy games and stuff. And there's always
something.
There's always games,
something going
on. You
down.
Know, playing with the new. It's always fun to have new guys doing stuff, just competing and pitting them against one another. But for the most part, you know, ours left us well enough alone unless you really messed up.
Yeah, you messed
they
up.
They got pretty salty.
Yeah, there's some hammers in
which
there.
Which is important. You know, that's just, you got to maintain the standard. So.
At what point did you become an instructor?
After my second. So my first deployment, we deployed to Yemen. We were augmenting with the squadrons. And 10 days before deploying, I had my firstborn son. And then 3 months before my second deployment to Iraq, which was in Northern Iraq, we did like the whole Mosul push thing. I think you guys had Ephraim Matos on here too. He talked about kind of like the Mosul thing.
Yeah.
You guys remember him?
Mm-hmm.
So we did like the Mosul push. And then I had my wife at home with a 3-year-old and then two 2-year-olds. And I was like, I'm going to do another one. And she's like, can you maybe do something else
really?
Real quick? Yeah. Like for just a little while. And so I was like, yeah, that's fair. You know, I need to spend some time with the fam. So I had a bunch of buddies over at second phase and started texting them and saying, you know, how was it? How was it over there? And they're like, dude, come on over. It's great. It's a great job. So ended up going over there. And
second phase?
Yes. I was a second phase instructor. And I showed up over there and they're like, hey, man, we're stoked you're here. Your pool comp requal.
What?
Next week.
Oh no!
Are you Here's kidding me? They EP made you do card. That again?
Here's an EP card, you know, and I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. For those of you guys who don't know what pool competency is, it's like the hardest test. I think it's the hardest single test in butts, without a doubt.
100%.
It's and you know, guys have compared it like it's like hell week in 20 minutes. It's freaking a miserable test, and you're studying for it, you know, nonstop for weeks. Before you do it. And so I'm showing up as an instructor and these guys are telling me like, it's a pool comp requal. It's like, before you can give it to a student, you have to do it again. Son of a gun, dude.
Like,
you guys did not tell
head,
me
bro.
That.
I
you
remember.
Did not tell me that before I took this
yeah,
job.
Exactly,
you know,
man.
I would have not come
what
here
the hell?
If I knew this. And dude, they got me in twin 80s, lined up. Spoiler alert. They're messing with me.
Oh,
but
okay.
I'm on the pool deck, you know, like air, like doing my dry runs, dude, dirt diving it, like on the pool deck. I've studied for like, you know, 48 hours.
Oh my God.
And sweating bullets, dude. And I get in the water and next thing I know, I'm like almost butt naked in the water and all the dudes are just laughing. I'm FSAing off the deck by myself and coming up and they're all like, gotcha, nerd, you know.
Oh my God.
Fucking team guys,
that was
man.
The first, yeah. Nobody, they were like, we've never done that before. This is hilarious.
Hilarious.
And I was like,
Stoics,
we will now do this to every single instructor that comes in here. I will not be the only one. You know, and so now we did it to like all the other
That's
guys
brilliant.
Coming in. It was fun, but definitely made you like nobody knew. And every time a guy came in, they're like, crap, nobody told me this.
There should be a video sweating of their faces when you tell them that.
Dude.
Hey, you got to do.
Like, I should, yeah.
I mean, from smiling to everything's great
it was,
to depression.
You don't, yeah. Like, no blood in my head. It was just.
And I don't care how tough he is.
Son of a gun.
How much of a warfighter, badass he is. If you tell him he's got to go do full comp again, because you can't fight back.
Oh, dude. Yeah, I say that. I think about that all the time. I remember being an instructor and, you know, all these guys are just, they want to do well. They want to pass this test. And for whatever reason or another, they end up failing it. And there's just, it's very rare that somebody passes it their first attempt. but it's funny because, like, the instructors always have that part of your soul. You know, they always know what it's like to see you come out of the water. And it's like, you're just like broken that you didn't make
it. Especially when you fail.
Yeah,
especially I failed three times.
Yeah, I got it.
I was on the weeping wall three times.
Terrible.
And there was guys getting AGEs, guys drowning and dying. Yeah. And they're just like, they don't care.
Yeah. Dude, it's brutal.
I mean, that thing will kill you.
Yeah, there's a tank right next door. If you get an AGE, we're going to throw you in that thing. You're going to go for a 6-hour ride.
I mean, that evolution, they say, sorry, it'll freaking kill you. Or it'll mess you up for life.
Yeah,
we had a Harvard grad, one of our officers, AGE, man. He gets strokes, faints, syncope now. Memory loss.
Yeah.
Freaking did a number on him.
It'll mess you up, man. We had a couple AGEs while I was an instructor. And that's, I mean, it's scary stuff, dude. You see
a
student come out.
Didn't you have
luckily,
an
the staff's
yeah,
awesome.
I had one.
Oh, did you?
Not in pull comp, in real life.
Oh, no.
I guess.
So you, did, real life, you had to do
yeah,
right.
On an op.
No.
Yeah,
way,
jacked me
man.
Up. I was in the chamber for a long time.
Yeah,
I dropped 60 ride. Pounds, man, afterwards. It got in my spine and in my brain.
Dang.
It was a good one.
That's scary.
I was working with the Brits.
Do you remember any of it?
No.
Yeah. It's the craziest thing. So somebody will get it, and it's like they had a stroke. You know, they look like they're a stroke victim. And then you put them in that chamber, and then they're just, as soon as you get them to depth, they're like, what just happened?
Yeah. So I was
back. It's like immediate.
I was actually locked into the submarine and crawled all the way down from the chamber down to the mess deck. So however flights of stairs that is. And the doc was standing there. He's like, man, it looked like you had one hell of a rodeo out there. Because they could see us on the underwater camera.
Okay.
And we had, catastrophic loss of the boat. And freaking,
oh, really?
They went past the nuclear reactor by the time they got me back in there. And I was like, nah, peel fine.
Dude, can't talk.
Can't talk.
Wow.
And I turned around and looked at him. And man, apparently I fainted. And this doctor, Doc Colin Dirks is his name.
Mm-hmm.
Badass.
Yeah.
Put me on his shoulder, all of me. And called my ass back up those stairs and threw me in submarine. That chamber. He's a machine. Yeah. I love the man. He saved my life. He's a doctor in Atlanta now.
Yeah.
Badass.
That's crazy.
And then I woke up 50, whatever, however many rides later, just kind of like, what's going on, man?
I feel fine.
Oh, yeah. Good right here, bro.
Dude, that's brutal. I know.
Crazy.
Yeah. I mean, you're a lot bigger than I am. I was
like, a lot bigger.
I was
back
like
then.
135 when I enlisted. Tiny. Skin and bones. And then I was living off of hot and ready's, you know, pizza and working out. And then by the time I got to boot camp, I was like 145. And then getting into buds, I finally started putting on weight. And I think that's why it broke, like my body broke.
Yeah,
just because it's not used to throwing around that weight. But dude, there's some big guys in the teams, man. And so when somebody says they throw you up on their shoulders and carry you,
that's why I said
it's
that.
Like pretty, it's a big deal. Dudes are.
And I mean, he was the man.
That's sick, dude.
And a doctor. He's one of those triple hat trick dudes. You know, like, nice. Good for you.
Yeah.
Punk, nerd. You know what I mean? Like, you're good looking and a doctor.
Yeah.
Great.
Overachievers.
But yeah.
Gosh.
Badass. But
that's crazy.
So good. How long were you a second? How long did you do this?
I did 3 years.
I never got a chance to do that. And I've heard it was a lot of fun because of the way you guys can talk to each other and what that thing teaches you how to get in people's heads.
Yeah.
No one can get in someone's head like a buds instructor.
Dude, the program does a lot of it. And then the rest is that sense of humor.
Right.
You know, it's just you learn a certain way to talk after a little while. And you're kind of shadowing other instructors. And you just kind of end up getting into it. And it just becomes like this well-oiled machine that is a lot of fun to be a part of. I didn't know I wanted to get out when I showed up to buds. Obviously, I my intention was to like finish in the platoon.
Yeah.
But for... you know, one thing led to another. I ended up transferring out. But as far as like, if you can't finish in the platoon, it's a great place to kind of give back to the community, raise up your replacement, and also pour into some young guys and kind of give them some ethical, you know, like mentorship. It's harder to do that in first phase because you're more of a beat down. But second phase, you have a couple, you know, the brown shirts, especially after pool comp, they're more likely to actually end up making it through the program. So it's nice to actually, hey man, there's a strong likelihood you're going to show up to the teams and work with me, work directly under me or some of my very best friends. And so I want to make sure that I'm sending them the best quality product that I can. And so just having an opportunity to talk to some of those young guys and kind of mentor them was really cool. It's a really cool way to finish.
What year was that?
Geez, 2017 to 2020.
What's that like being an instructor for the first couple of days as opposed to being a student, right? Because you only remember one side of it.
So the instructor, they have a program now called IQC, Instructor Qualification Course. And so you kind of shadow some of the instructors, but it's essentially a speech class, you know, teaches you how to instruct from Navy curriculum or military curriculum. And then you have a certain time where you're just kind of like shadowing and watching the other instructors and auditing classes and stuff. And then you kind of like get more and more hands-on. And then you have to like get high risk qualified so you can actually run like high risk evolutions. But I guess, you know, it feels like second nature because it's still the team. You still feel like it's the team. You know, you're still working directly with team guys. There's about the same amount of dudes working in a phase as a platoon. Your job's different now. And your mission now is these students and these evolutions instead of doing a workup or OTB or watching some other kid do it and telling them how bad they did.
That's a great way. I didn't even think about it until you said that. But Buds is like being in the teams.
The only thing different
is your mindset's different.
Yeah, and I get to go home.
Because we still get yelled at by the other guys. Yeah. As a matter of fact, your platoon mates will rip you up.
Yeah, and instructing too. I mean, you know, there's mistakes that happen as instructors. Sometimes you might miss a point on the brief and it's still professional development.
Yeah, of course.
You know, you still need to be a pro and you are the example to these young students. So the standard is very high, especially when you're getting in first phase. You know, you're the first phase of a Navy SEAL that a lot of these kids are ever seeing. And so the standard, you know, we expect you to be a certain way.
Those are the guys that can really run. And just freaking machines, dude.
Yeah, there's some beasts. They put some beasts at first phase. It's a really cool. Those guys, it was awesome. It's a much more rigorous schedule for a first phase, obviously, for those instructors. But it's always fun because they pull instructors from every phase to work Hell Week. And so that's always just a blast to be a part of and kind of be on the opposite side of the wheel and watch those.
How do you get selected for that midnight crew, man?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Alpha shift is the shift to be a part of. Is
I just remember being really scared when they show up. Like I was legit scared.
Yeah. Shift chains comes in. Those trucks wheel around the beach, and you're just like, and they're on their bullhorns, like Alpha's here. You know, you're
like deep, monotone, scary voice. Yeah, like, oh my god.
Is the ghost girl that calls the quarter deck. Yes. Yeah. Is she still, she's still alive? There.
Yeah, that's so funny. Not many people know about the Phantom. Have you guys talked about this before?
She freaking called our hotel room at the Dell with our little kids in the room, and she kept calling all night. Yes, I would love to know who this is.
I don't know who it is either. It's a mystery.
She legit, 3 a.m., called my hotel room. I was dead asleep.
How did she know?
I have no idea.
Well, Marcus was doing a speech in Coronado that was a public thing.
Okay.
And so his name was kind of all over.
We know he's here.
And of course, you're staying at the Dell.
Dude.
When I picked that phone up and put it to my ear and her voice came through there, I sat up immediately.
Yeah.
And I was like, are you kidding me?
Here?
And she immediately hit me with the stuff.
Yeah.
Like with her every thing, time. With her business.
Yep.
And I was like,
just back blast area
stunned.
Clear.
Like, have you ever been stunned in life?
Totally.
I was stunned. And then I hung the phone up. She called back. It called
and
back.
And I'm like, who the F is this?
And she can hear it. Yeah. She's like, I was like, you're not going to, I can't explain what this is.
Yeah. This is going to take a little while.
Let
me deal with this and we'll talk
tomorrow. The freaking Phantom. Yeah. And then I called the quarterdeck or the front desk and I was like, hey, please don't patch that. And it came through again.
We said, don't let any phone calls come through to the room. Our kids are sleeping, our little ones.
Yeah.
And still kept happening. I think we ended up unplugging the phone.
She hadn't missed a beat.
Yeah. Same.
No,
same.
No change in the voice or anything, man. It like, boom.
Yeah. For those who don't know, have you guys talked about the Phantom on the podcast?
Once. Before, maybe? But you, it's been a long time. You can explain. Know,
the buds, so when you go to SEAL training, every command has a quarter deck, which is, there's a watch standard 24/7, somebody there. There's a telephone, and the Phantom is a mysterious person's. We don't know, male or female. It's assumed female.
Sounds like a female.
Sounds like a female, but there's been rumors. And they will call to try to seduce young. They're the sirens of buds, and they will try to seduce young
She's
sailors
been there a long time.
Into terrible mistakes. And yeah, she's been doing that since long I time. Was in buds.
Yeah.
Since he was in
since
buds.
I was buds.
No way. Dude.
Yes.
Yeah. Bro, since I had guys
are
in my buds.
Are you kidding me? This is legendary.
To have the balls to four watch?
No.
Just to talk to her for 4 hours.
Dude. No way.
Just to listen, because she can talk.
Yeah.
She can freaking drop it, man. Yeah. I mean, she can get in your head.
How
with what
funny
she can spit.
Is that, dude? I had these are the kind of funny things that come up in these conversations, and I totally forget about until.
A wife
somebody
does
mentions
not forget
it up.
When it happens
in front of her children.
The hotel, dude, I mean, hotel.
And you had no idea.
I had
about
no
this.
Idea. And,
how
and I'm like,
that?
Who in the F is this?
Yeah.
And then the next morning we were
Marcus
having breakfast.
Like, don't take it personal.
Yeah.
Take it personal. It's not.
The next morning we were having breakfast with some of his teammates. And the first question out of my mouth, do you know who the Phantom is? And they're like, how do you know? And I'm like, she freaking
do you know what the Phantom is? Like,
any team
it's like
guy,
Marcus, what did you say?
Guy, yeah, when you yeah, say yeah, that, yeah, they'll immediately
yeah,
go, yeah.
Yeah.
And I probably talked to yeah, her for hours.
That's so funny, man.
I mean, at least for 20 generations of us.
That's crazy. I didn't know it was around
oh, yeah,
that long.
It's, I would love to know who this is.
Yeah, I remember being
I hope she comes out before
like,
she dies and yeah, just lets us know who that is, man.
Yeah.
Because she is a freaking.
I mean, she's got to go on her.
There should be a picture up on the quarterdeck of just this dark shadow. No, you can't see their face, right?
Well, it's
just
I'm picturing like Bolo. Jessica Rabbit or something, like some yeah, beautiful shape.
That's very generous.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably
that's
generous,
very generous of you. I don't know about that. I think
I
it probably looks more like that right
yeah,
there.
Yeah,
that statue.
I would love that's to know who it is. I mean, not. It's. I think it's funny
yeah,
now, but in the moment, I was like,
she
not,
can make millions of dollars on phone sex line.
We could probably. Yeah, we need to have somebody like trace that line somehow. Or you think? You
what
think somebody would have committed to making that happen?
Yeah, who's
at
this?
Point,
the Phantom.
Yeah.
Trust
I think
me,
whoever
you'll
it is,
out,
either has a friend that works at the Dell or they work at the Dell, because there's no way. I went down to the front desk and said, don't let any calls come through. And it wasn't under his name.
It worked at the
we
Dell.
Use
yeah, I was
a,
using under my alias.
He has an alias
dude,
that we booked.
Still
under.
Showed up.
Secret.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, now that we're talking about it, it might be the longest mystery that I know about in America.
Dude, that is a great, this is
I mean,
the next National Treasure
there's
movie.
There's D.B. Cooper and
they're
then
gonna
there's
make
the,
about
Buds,
this.
The Buds Phantom.
It's going to be Nicolas Cage, you know, finding the Phantom.
Yeah, finding the Phantom because she's absolutely real.
Dude, yeah, it's a real
yeah,
thing.
Oh, yeah, I heard it.
Now,
isn't that great?
Yeah.
That's part
funny,
of Buds
man,
you never hear about,
that's pretty
man,
funny. Yeah, those are like the
little nuggets
that
yeah,
you'd like
nuggets,
completely forget about.
Okay,
gosh,
so when you got out.
Yeah.
What did you start doing? I want to hear
yeah,
how
a,
you got into
so,
the art.
Well, so the art thing, I was an instructor and I grew up drawing as a kid. So, you know, growing up in Southeast Asia, there was a huge language barrier for me and art was just a common language. So I drew a ton as a child and I kind of put it off to the wayside and then got to the teams and, you know, gosh, it turned into tattoo designs and team guys love art. We just collect it on our bodies instead of in our houses. And so did a lot of tattoos for guys and logo kind of designs and flags and patches or whatever. And I remember I went into the Master Chief's office for something at one point and I saw the statue of the Trident and it was looked sick. It was really cool. I'd never seen it before. And I was like, man, that's awesome. I wish I could have something like that in the instructor's office, but we don't have that kind of space. And so I thought, well, why don't I try, you know, you're always like going to museums and stuff. I'm like, I could paint that or I could draw that. And I was like, why don't I try painting it? And so I went to a craft supply shop and I painted a Trident a lot like the one I just painted you guys. But, I painted that, brought it into the office, and a buddy of mine's like, dude, where'd you get that? I want one. I said, I painted it. He's like, no way. You didn't paint that.
No,
you're a liar. And he's like, where'd you get it? And I was like, no, and really, I painted it, man. And he's like, dude, I want one. Can you get me a print? And I was like, I don't know how to do that. And so he's like, oh, let's like take a good picture of it. And then I'll pay you, I'll give you $100. And I was like, dude, all right, sick. And so made a print for him, gave him a Trident. He took it home. And then another guy wanted one. And then another guy. And then next thing you know, there's like a line of team guys outside the office getting these prints. And divers at the shop wanted a Mark V helmet, so I did a Mark V for the divers.
That sucker, it's sick. Yeah, it's awesome. Cool.
So that was like my second painting
and ever.
That was legit. Thanks, man. Thank you. It was cool, and so started selling prints of that, and I started doing pretty good, like you know, selling prints. And I was like, man, this is really fun. You know, like I have a little business here. I'm working with some supply chain stuff. I'm doing embossing some prints and stuff, and it's like this would be really fun to do one day. Because like I was starting to kind of gear my mind towards getting out. I like kind of knew I wanted to get out, but I just didn't know. It's hard because you don't really want to do it because you want something that fires you up the same that buds and becoming a SEAL fires you up. And I heard that was like the biggest struggle for guys transitioning. It's like, make sure you have a plan, make sure you know what you want to do and then get out. And 100%. So I was kind of getting out and I didn't really have that. And I knew I needed to get out, but I was like, Lord, just provide, you know, a way. Because I don't know why, but you're putting on my heart to leave this community that I love, to spend more time with my family. And so if I'm going to do something else, you got to put a fire in my gut for something. And man, just one thing led to another. And I started selling these prints and my wife's like, hey, do you know this guy, Master Chief so-and-so? And I was like, yeah, he was up for MCPON of the Navy.
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah, his wife just messaged me. She said he's going to come by and he wants to talk to you. And I was like, oh crap, I'm busted. You know, like I'm selling prints on the side of my career. Like, you know, it can be kind of frowned upon. I was like, he's going to get me. And so I was like, oh crap. Like when, you know, and she's like, oh, he said he'll be here in 15 minutes. I'm like, right, oh, son of a gun, you know? And like 5 minutes later, he's like at my front door. Yeah. And I'm like, hey, Master Chief, how you doing? And he's like, hey man, you paint that picture? I said, yes, Master Chief. He's like, dude, badass. He's like, you working on anything else? I'm like, yeah, I'm painting this picture of the Hotel Del right now. And he's like, can I see it? So he came in and I'm working on this painting. And he's like, dude, you've got to do something with this. You've got to do something with this. And, you know, hearing that from a team guy who's experienced and like up there in rank, that's like a really good warm. It gives you a warm and fuzzy.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, what is that? I never really thought about like doing something with this, like actually doing, trying to do, be successful as an artist. And so that kind of put the seed in my head to, you know, maybe I'll try to pursue a career in art. And I still didn't know really what that looked like. But yeah, I ended up transitioning out with the idea of like one day I'd like to be an artist, you know? And I got a job at a tech company working as a sales rep. And that was just not for me. So I was, you know, doing that job and 9 to 5. And then after I put the kids down, I was painting until 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, just grinding it out. Like my life has been segmented into, it seems, different Rocky montages, you know, like before Buds, you're doing the Rocky paint or workout montage.
Yeah.
And then in the teams, it's like ULT. And then this was like my painting montage, or just like nonstop grinding out painting after painting, trying to get better and just falling asleep to YouTube videos on how to paint. And
is that how you did
different
it?
Artists? Yeah, man.
That was going to be my question.
School of YouTube, man. Just a school of YouTube.
Bob Ross?
And, oh, yeah. No, not so much Bob Ross. Bob Ross is more like a one and done. You know, he'll knock out a painting in a single session. And
that
I was kind of like, yeah, he's Bob Ross is a legend.
Everybody knows
Bob Ross.
Marcus,
I still watch him every night.
Dude, I know. I love that.
I love that.
He has a very soothing voice. I remember my wife and I, because when I first started looking, I was like, oh, dude, Bob Ross, he's an artist. And we started watching Bob Ross and we started like, I couldn't watch him at night without just immediately falling asleep.
Isn't that great?
It's just the nicest.
Because he's a military guy.
Fluffiest clouds.
Yeah.
You're just, and it doesn't matter.
Like,
it doesn't matter if yours doesn't look like mine. Just do it how it makes you feel.
Oh, yeah. Every night, man, to fall asleep. Dude, I'll throw that on there. Did you know they don't give out his paintings? Like, you can't buy them?
Dude, they're like super expensive, too, now. If you can find one, they're very.
If anybody out there was just feeling magnanimous.
Just so generous.
If you're just wanting to hand out a Bob Ross, I will freaking take one, man.
Dude, put it right behind you.
just part of my life, man. Dude.
Yeah, Bob Ross is great, dude. So yeah, I just, you know, YouTube, a lot of YouTube and
so no formal training because you're
no
your
formal training
are thanks. Amazing.
Thank you so much.
Amazing.
Yeah. Oh, thanks guys.
Like when they it looks real, it, when it Stop starts it. Looking real, look, you earned no, this, thanks, man. Like you're a thanks. Team guy too. I'll tell you if you were a fuck up, man. I'm like, hey, bro.
I remember showing Marcus because Marcus doesn't like go on Instagram and look at stuff, and I remember pulling up your art. And showing him, and I'm like, this is a team guy, babe. Like,
I didn't believe it.
This was a long time ago, but we have followed your art ever since.
The attention to detail, I know we hear that in our lives every single day, attention to detail, how important that is. But when you were talking about that Mark V,
yeah.
When you painted, when I saw that for the first time, and then I've been the one you gave to Sean, I follow your art.
Yeah.
You ever hit that point where you realize that the best investment that you can make is in yourself? That's where I'm kind of at right now. I've been diving deep into Masterclass, taking Alex Ohanian's class on how to build a startup to help me grow my travel app. I've also got some other classes on real estate, just trying to learn the best and smartest ways to buy and sell. Every lesson feels like you're just sitting down with someone who's already been through it, and now they're just showing you the blueprint. With Masterclass, you can learn from the best to become your best. With plans starting at just $10 a month, billed annually, you get unlimited access to over 200 classes taught by the world's best business leaders, writers, chefs, athletes, and so many more out there. The bite-sized lessons make it so easy to fit into even the busiest schedule, and 3 in 4 members say that they feel so inspired every time they watch. There's truly something for everyone out there, and I promise you will find something that makes your life better. Plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's really no risk. Right now, our listeners get an additional 15% off of any annual membership out there at masterclass.com/TNQ. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/TNQ. Again, that is masterclass.com/TNQ.
And like you're getting better.
Yeah,
like
thank
the detail
you.
On that.
I'm trying, man. I hope I'm getting better.
Let me ask you a question. Can you start a painting and then stop and go do some stuff and then come back and get back to it? Or do you once you start it?
It depends on like how obsessive I am, because sometimes I'll start a project and it's like I cannot stop. It's like an addiction. I have to finish this.
So you got.
But then other times it's also like I've been able to block it out as like it's work. A lot of painting seems like work to me now, and I get like more enjoyment out of like the process of coming up with a picture or like collaborating with somebody on an art project, and that like creative side of my brain and kind of figuring out what I'm going to paint next. That chase is a lot of fun for me now too. But the painting side of it is still like, you know, it's always great just to, I really look forward to that big dopamine hit of stepping back and looking at a painting. And so the sooner I sit down and just knock it out, the better.
And what's your primary
concern,
baby?
What are your biggest, who are your biggest inspirations? Do you like?
Ooh, that's constantly changing. That's a great question. I think, so when I first started painting, I didn't know any artists or I didn't know anything about art really. Other than that, I enjoyed drawing. And I actually remember getting like put on the spot with this question. Like one time, my wife and I like to go downtown Charleston. It's a big art town. There's galleries all over the place. And so we'll go hop around to different galleries and check out art. And I'm looking at a painting and kind of like analyzing it. And the lady's like, you kind of look like you're into art. And my wife's like, oh, he paints. And she's like, oh, who are some of your favorite painters? And I'm like, I don't know. And it, to me, it like kind of hit me in the gut because it's like, you want to be something, but you don't know anything about it. It's like, you want to be a Navy SEAL, but you don't even know what a Navy, you know, you don't even know what their job is. Right. And so that really challenged me to like really find out what I enjoy and what I like about art. And as I kind of like learned that, I learned that there's like more and more things that I like about different artists. And you're always kind of like grabbing, you know, little nuggets here and there and pulling them into kind of make your own piece. When it first started though, I was really into statues. So I really like sculptures, guys like Bernini. Mm-hmm. He's like an incredible marble sculptor, and I mean, got like tattoos of some of his artwork. And when I first started too, one of the big pieces of advice that people give you is like paint black and white. And so a lot of my early work is of statues just because it's black and white. It's really easy. So when I first started getting into oil painting, I started painting a lot of statues. And that kind of got me used to the medium. And then you branch out and you start looking at like the old Baroque painters like Caravaggio, who's like, you know, very dark and moody, and a lot of guys like Michelangelo, you know, the old masters, because mm-hmm. those were the dudes that like built the community. It's almost like the teams, you know, I got to know about like the World War II guys, and then I can mm-hmm. learn about the Vietnam guys. Yeah. And then what did the Vietnam guys bring that's going to contribute to the modern warrior, you know? So there's always like, there's like elements to the history that stacks and tells the story of today. And so it was, my story is very similar in that, like, I'm looking at artists of the history and I'm constantly just like appreciating what those guys are bringing to the table and figuring out how I can incorporate it into my work. And so now I'm like, I'm really into like the old illustrators like Wyeth and Rockwell and, you know, those guys that can really just tell great stories.
That's Americana, man.
Yeah. And yeah, truly. Yeah, it really is. But like those guys couldn't exist without the old masters too. Those, you know, they were studying the old masters too. And so now I'm looking at their work and I'm thinking, all right, how can my work one day contribute to that? And I still feel very much like I'm experimenting. I'm in my infancy. I'm just like, I'm a new guy just trying to absorb as much as I can all the time. And I tell people all the time, I was like, I don't think I would be a good artist if I wasn't a SEAL first. Like, because it taught me how to be okay with just having crappy failure piece. You know, sometimes you just can't control it and something sucks.
You can send your throwaways over here.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Well, it sounds like when you said when you first got pinned with your trident and you felt like an imposter, like that's how you're in that same phase right now, but your work has proven itself. Like, thanks. I feel like you need
to accept that you've earned your trident of art. Thank you. That's very kind of you.
I mean, we got to give you a paintbrush or something. I mean, how do we need to
earn your trident every day, though? You know, I still feel like I'm earning it. And every day I want to show up to the studio and just create the best artwork that I can. Because a lot of this is going into people's homes, and that's a sacred space.
For a while.
To me, that's a sacred space. You know, your kids are going to grow up looking at these images and they're going to remember that time that dad got that, or they're going to talk about like when dad dies, I'm getting that painting. Mm-hmm. And that's really the case for a lot of these, because these are going to outlast all
of
them.
We need to get you one in the White House or in the Pentagon. I've got to call Trump up and be like, hey, bro, you got to.
Yeah, I've had that. I've gotten real close a couple times.
That needs to happen.
Yeah, I've gotten real close.
So I got a question for you, since you study in art now. When I was studying Michelangelo and you go into the system and you see all his paintings, the way he paints humans.
Dude, the form.
Is like...
Yeah.
Different.
Right.
It's like, is that, because humans didn't look like that, obviously.
Right. Yeah.
But his eye of how they did and how he drew everything was kind of cartoonish, voluptuous.
Right. It's like the ideal, you know, it's the ideal man, like perfect musculature. Yeah. And they didn't really have like women models, I don't think, at the time. So like even their women are very masculine because that they're using male models for a lot of it. Yeah. That stuff's super, super interesting. They're using a different type of paint too. So it dries like really, really fast. So they're on a timeline with the layers that they had to put in. And so that stuff, I mean, yeah, those guys were all doing kind of a different thing in a different style with their art. Cause they're coming out with like, I think a lot of like Greek influence and stuff. You notice like all the Greek statues and stuff, everything's nudes. That's like the old traditional school of art is studying the human form.
I tell you what got me fascinated into art was Kincaid.
Dude,
I happened to go past the Kincaid painter gallery.
Of light. Yeah, he's like the opener, like a lot of people's opener and intro into art. He's actually a really interesting case study into art itself, just because he's like the only artist to ever IPO. Like he is a publicly traded entity, him as an individual, which is crazy. Yeah, well, so he has like Kincaid School because he's dead. Kincaid died, so there's people that like study under Kincaid School, and I think they paint Kincaid, so they can sign Kincaid's signature, I think, because he's publicly traded. He is a publicly traded person.
So how did you even find an original, right? Those things got to be...
Yeah, it had to be like, you know, pre-life. Should've and that's like a lot of the modern... I know, dude. I know. Everybody's like, yeah, darn it, Kincaid. Yeah. Kincaid's an interesting... you can still buy one of his peers. There's a guy that worked with him. His name is... gosh dang, what's the guy's name? I'm going to remember it later. But one of his like best friends is essentially, he wrote those Dinotopia books. Do you remember those as a kid? Like they're like dinosaur books where they put harnesses and stuff on like T-Rexes and stuff. James Gurney, I think. James Gurney and Kincaid were really, really close. Very similar artists. Well, I think Gurney's way better, but you can still buy a Gurney. I don't know how much it'll cost you. They're like best friends.
So you got Rockwell, Kincaid, and now we got Hughes.
Yeah, dude. Hughes. I don't know. Don't put me up there, guys. Come on. Give me a couple more years. Give me a couple more years. I'm still earning my stripes.
No. We're putting stock in you, bro.
Dude, I'm not publicly traded yet, but.
Have you done a gallery?
No, I do everything in my studio and I post it online and then it goes pretty quick, typically.
And requests obviously have to be coming through the door, right?
Yeah, and I'm really bad at social media. I hate it so much, but I know it's so necessary. I'm terrible. But you know, a lot of commissions and work that I do, I don't even post it. I've done a bunch of stuff for Team Guys too.
Sure.
And that can take a long time.
We'll keep you in business.
So I'll be out of business. You know, I won't post anything that I do for those dudes just because a lot of them are still in. And you know, you get guys that are retiring from development group and they want something meaningful from their time out. And so, you know,
hey,
deployment pictures are really cool, but, you can just print it out and over time, sun's going to damage that. And it's just, there's archival inks and stuff now, but there's just something about having something in oil paint that really holds that resemblance. That's going to live for, you know, centuries and, you can pass down to your family. That's more permanent. So people like oil paintings for that reason.
What's the painting you've done that has been most meaningful to you?
Ooh, I hate them all equally, I think, right now. No, I don't know. Meaningful. Everything that I work on at the time is just like super impactful and important to me. I don't know. The biggest one I painted is like a 5 foot by 7 foot. It's like three operators, kind of like it's a Bible story of like David's mighty men. And that one was like really, really challenging for me just because it was massive. So I think that one's probably the most meaningful just because of the size. It's like a actual full size portrait. That one's probably the most meaningful for me just because it took so much time and it'd be expensive to replace. But I held on to that. And some of them I hold on to. I just like put them in the storage, you know, put them on the wall in the closet.
I got a place you can store them too, bro.
Dude,
anytime you want them, you can come get them.
Dude, yeah, it's funny. I did that. I just finished shooting a documentary and we did like this David and Goliath painting for it. I did like this big old painting of David, like about to pull the head off Goliath, and it's pretty morbid. And I'm like, dude, I don't know if anybody's going to buy this, but I might send it down to your studio. You know, I like the idea of lending paintings at least. So it like, let somebody else enjoy these pictures and take a look at them.
You got a painting of Dave and Goliath?
I haven't taken any good pictures of it yet, but it's pretty sick, dude. It's pretty cool. It's David. He's bending down. He's like about to pull the head off. It's pretty morbid, dude. It's pretty morbid.
But
it's
dope, dude.
It's like Team Guy. Yeah, it's very Team Guy.
You should put Trident on David. Yeah,
dude. I thought about doing like a modern take on it because something that I really appreciated about like studying the old masters. You look at some of these pictures, and you'll see like Jesus being carried away by dudes in like Dutch Flemish armor. You know, which isn't period accurate which is super interesting. It'd be like having like Jesus pulled away by a bunch of cops. You know, it's like wouldn't look right to our culture, but their culture that it like put them into the scene. It made like it made those stories real to them, and so you kind of like taking some of those themes and replicating them in our time. Like, what would it be like if you know David beheaded Goliath today? What would he be wearing, or what would that scene look like? So some of that stuff's kind of fun to play with a little bit, and that's kind of like where the creative energy and part of the process. That
if you put him in body armor with our ProTech helmets on and had his M4 slung and a freaking blood,
I'll show you a picture.
That would look sick.
So I did do one of a operator holding a giant's head, and I sold it to a dude I think he's in Vegas, I believe. But Instagram has their little problems with violence and firearms. So some pictures I just don't even mess with it. I know it's gonna go to a good home, and so I'll just send it and the Lord will provide the next ram. So
what's this documentary about?
Oh, it's called Makers. And Canon Plus is producing, and I believe it's going to be licensed on Angel TV. But it's just about, like, you know, creatives. And they got in touch with me through a mutual friend somehow. And they're like, dude, we'd love to come out to the studio and film a you painting a picture and kind of tell your story. And so it's just a whole kind of spiel on my childhood in Southeast Asia and kind of like what we're talking about here and kind of going into the whole art world. But it has like more of like that visual component that's really fun to kind of play with. But
what's your goal with
what
the
is
art?
My goal? Mm-hmm. Jeez, OP, that's the question. Just to be better every day, you know, and continue to provide paintings that are meaningful to people and speak to, you know, what's going on in our time now. And ultimately, you know, to glorify the Lord through whatever work I'm doing. That's my goal, and be around my kids and love on my wife and enjoy time with the little ones. Why I got it. So that's my goal.
That's a perfect one.
Yeah, man. I'm living the American dream now.
And I love that you did the collaboration with Forged for the benefit of vets.
Oh yeah, vets. That's right. Yeah, I did we did like the t-shirt thing. Yeah, Mikey Sowers, great dude. He reached out to me years ago.
He's a fantastic
ago.
Human being.
He's awesome. He's one of my instructors. And so that's always weird. I'm like, hello, instructor Sowers, how you doing? Yeah. Like, he's like,
still call
me Mike.
Hoo-yah, you know, instructor.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, right? Like, I'm still saying hoo-yah, like, all of a sudden. It's like Tourette's. I can't help myself.
Away. Yeah, it never goes away.
Dude,
I still do it, too.
I remember being a team guy, and one of the instructors at GMT was like, I'm on the A-dub on the 50 on top, and he like gives me some kind of instructions, and I'm like, hoo-yah, instructor. And he's like, what did you just call me? I'm like, sorry, you know, whatever his name was, but dude, it never
goes away.
Sometimes it just like comes out.
Yeah.
But
I don't know. We love Mikey. He's part of our family.
That's great. Have you guys done stuff with vets?
Oh, yeah.
You guys still part of that? Mm-hmm. That's cool. They're a cool organization.
Yeah.
The Capones, I think I first got introduced to them through Sean.
Yeah.
And that's where we kind of started that whole journey. And they have a really cool event out there in Coronado.
Mm-hmm. I'll be there.
Oh, are you guys going to be there? Is that November?
Marcus typically? Can't go.
I'll be it this year.
He has to go to something else with his brother, but my sister-in-law and I will be out there.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I went out there, I guess, 2 years ago when they auctioned off that painting.
Mm-hmm.
I did like this like psychedelic operator thing. It was really cool, a really cool piece. And now it's out there with DJ Shipley.
He's a great human being too.
DJ, yeah. DJ's great guy. He's
an awesome dude.
He's been really cool,
him,
man.
Marcus, they're great dudes, man. Those three guys you just lined out.
Yeah, DJ's, we message on Instagram every now and then, and he wants a painting. He's like, dude, I want to get on your list. I'm like, sorry, dude, just give me a little while. But he's been like, dude, you can come out and shoot some photos and stuff if you need some reference photos. And I might have to take him up on it at some point. It's just, it's hard to break away sometimes when you're just like a one-man show at your house and you gotta pay the bills.
It's a good place to be, but then it's a hard place to be.
Yeah, totally. It's super nice because you're like running your own schedule. You're kind of your own boss. But at the same time, it's like if you stop, you stop. You know,
and team guys are pounding the shit out of you.
Yeah.
Like, hey, man.
Dude, they're my hardest clients.
They won't give
they're
up.
My hardest clients.
They won't give up.
You know, a lot of people, when they first commission paint, a lot of people collect art, but some people don't, you know, and especially team guys, it's kind of like, hey, I've never done this before. You know, how does this work? And,
can I give you $100?
Yeah. Yeah. This is $100, right? And so, you know, they're like, hey, how's it looking? What's up? They want updates all the time. And I'm like, dude, sometimes it feels like you, when you're a kid and you're drawing something at the table and your dad comes around to look at it and you're like, don't look, it's not done yet. Yeah, yeah. You know, it's not ready. So that's how it feels sometimes, showing off work that's not completed yet. It's funny. But
yeah, that's awesome, man.
Gosh, man, it's wild. How about you? You said you're in the garden a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Is that your kind of, it's gotten to be your outlet now?
When I got out, came off the Warrior Line, I went straight to the garden.
Really? Is it like big farming or did it start little for you? And then how did you get introed into that? Was it just a Texas ranch kid?
I grew up with it.
Yeah,
I grew up with it. And then, I like to say I'm West Coast Texas, right?
That's right.
I got some of that San Diego and then back to Texas. And then she and I had this farm out
here. I've always lived on land too, so.
She's huge into gardening.
Okay.
Yeah, I like growing flowers and veggies and that kind of stuff. And he likes more of the cow, handling the cows and
tractors and heavy machinery. Yeah, and
it's awesome. Yeah,
so we're a good team.
You guys do cattle and everything out there, huh? Dude, that's sweet. That's the deal, man. I love that about Texas.
Yeah, two lambs.
Two lambs. We have
chickens.
Chickens, cows. Freaking dogs.
Everything, yeah.
Wow. One goat that escaped.
And a partridge in a pear tree. Yeah. Goodness gracious.
We were supposed to get rid of the goats. Marcus hates goats. And it...
Some of my friends just got goats. I couldn't convince them. I couldn't get them out of it. Like, sheep are cute. And there's like biblical parallel to owning sheep.
Yeah.
You're like a shepherd. You know, now you're an actual shepherd.
I came home and they had put about 20 goats out there and I could smell it and it hit me in the face. And I went right back to Afghanistan. I was like, get these things out of my freaking house. Off my
property.
Not
my house. Dude.
Not my house. It was so funny because his mom was like,
my mother.
Yeah. Oh, really?
She said,
she brings in all the strays.
He'll be okay, honey.
Yes.
I said, Mama, he does not like goats. I promise you, he's going to get upset. And she goes, no, if I get him, he'll be fine. So she orders the goats to be delivered while he's gone.
Busted.
And then,
bro.
And then she calls me, honey, we're going to have to get rid of the goats. And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
All the horses, everything else, I'll submit.
Yeah.
When she does that, she's right. I'll usually submit. But not that. They had that billy goat out there and he was pissing all over everything. I could smell it, dude. Yeah. And I was like, you better get him away now.
What were you going to do with the goats?
She just
cleaning
them
up shrubs and the.
Yeah.
They're great for that.
Yeah, they are great for that.
Yeah,
clean up the underbrush.
Clean up underbrush like you can't believe, man.
But one escaped the roundup. And
she's still out there.
She's the little female goat. It's so she thinks she's a cow now.
Oh,
and
that's awesome.
She hangs out with the cows.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. So.
Man, that's a life. I love horses. I love Western art so much. I feel like if I was closer to this part of the country, it would be an irresistible pull to paint some Western.
There's a huge demand for it.
Stuff.
Military and Western art. Really? Always be a demand for that.
Man, dang. I know there's some really fantastic Western artists out there now. I don't think it's a place that I can contribute very much right now, but maybe one day.
Well,
come out and wrangle some cattle.
You can go out to our ranch and have any inspiration you want. There's everything out there.
Horses are awesome. They're great. One of my first artists that I got really into, his name was Ernest Massonnier. He was like, before celebrities, artists were like the celebrities. People would wait in lines to see new art. And this guy was the kind of dude, you know, works 3 years on one painting. But he built a train track in his backyard, like a little train station in his backyard, so he could draw as horses ran next to him on a train track. Because they didn't have photography. That's how they had to learn how to, you know, actually draw horse anatomy as it ran. And his name's Ernest Massonnier. He's got some really cool paintings, especially like the Napoleonic era battle scenes. Yeah, really cool stuff. But dude, horses are just sick. They're awesome beasts.
I went to this one in Rome. What was that place? My gosh, I'm going to have to look it up. We went to this one museum in Rome the last time we were there with the beautiful paintings everywhere. I mean, it was the most paintings I've ever seen in one.
In Rome.
What was that place?
Something.
Was it a palace? It was a house, right?
Like it was glorious. Something.
There was more paintings in there than there was in the Louvre.
Yeah,
like.
I've never seen this amount of paintings in one spot.
Every square inch covered on the wall.
Together stacked. And the big ones too, like the size of that TV.
There were small. There were cool sculptures.
Oh,
like,
nice.
Everywhere.
Isn't that interesting?
I don't even know how we wound up in there.
But. Yeah. How do we go from that to, you know, some of what we're putting out now? This brutalist architecture. It's just like build it as fast as you can, and then we're not going to do anything to the inside of it.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I know. I just got home 2 nights ago from Europe and it's looking at
Oxford?
Yeah.
Jeez, oh, Pete, dude. That's beautiful.
Well, Oxford, and then I went to the Cotswolds, and then I went to Normandy, and
then
finished off in Paris. And it was just looking at all, we go to Europe quite a bit, but
really?
I love the architecture there. And I'm staring at it thinking, how did we go from that to the shopping centers we have now?
Like, right.
Who went wrong? We have got to bring
godlessness.
Back.
It's godlessness.
Yeah.
It's terrible. Beauty is important. You know,
it is important.
It's so important. It
makes you feel good.
It transforms your soul when you're in really something there, man.
Yeah. I mean, we're
makes
just
you feel
like,
better.
Yeah, it's amazing. I, you know, I lament how little I've studied art as a young man, and you know how little I've appreciated good architecture and stuff as a kid, and now kind of like looking back at even all the places I've been all over the world, I'm like, man, I should have taken better advantage of some of the locations. It's all hindsight, but Oxford, I haven't been yet, but I want to go. I got out in 2020 and we had all these ambitions of greatness and then the world shut down.
Yeah.
You know, it was a terrible time to transition out of the teams. And then I was still in the reserve. So it's like, geez, oh, Pete, I can't do anything.
Yeah.
So,
all the best.
Everything's starting to, yeah, it was kind of like a, it was a blessing. It was like a restart. It really was, man. It just, to a certain extent, it was good because everything stopped, you know, including it offered me the opportunity to paint a lot more. So that was great.
So what's your bread and butter? Like, how can people support you that are listening?
I mean, follow me on Instagram, you know, if you want to buy a print, you can do that on my website, justinhughesart.com. But really just being a part of the community, reaching out and, you know, saying hi, on IG is cool, but, I don't really need anything from anybody. I'm just grateful to be here and telling the story and sharing conversations with wonderful people like yourselves. I don't want to ask for anything. I'm just grateful. Every day I keep doing this, I'm just like, dude, are you kidding me?
Well, I want everyone to go on to his website and buy print.
Yeah. Oh, you're very kind. Thanks.
Seriously,
you're
go check
sweet.
It out.
Thanks.
Yeah. It's
thanks. Get on the line for
thanks
an original.
So much. Yeah, right.
I've tried to paint. My sister-in-law and one of my best friends for my birthday one year brought out an artist that I love.
Cool.
She does flower, like,
still life?
I love flowers. Yeah. And she brought her out to paint my garden.
Okay.
And it was an amazing gift. It was like
sick. Yeah. That is like a great gift.
It really is. And she was trying to teach us how to paint.
Okay.
I cannot freaking paint. Like, it just looked like a one-year-old just scribbled on something.
I get that. Sometimes, like, the better artists aren't great teachers, too. You know, like, I don't think I'd be a great teacher. You know, my wife's told me to, hey, can you teach the kids how to paint or, you know, do something? And I said, I don't think you're going to like me as an instructor.
Yeah,
as an instructor. I'm in the back with a bullhorn, like, I said quinacridone or no magenta.
You heard what
you know,
I said?
Like, this doesn't, you call that phthalo blue?
Yeah. Van Dyke Brown. Use more.
That's right. Van Dyke Brown. That's it. No, I think, like, it's one of those things where art is, it takes a lot of patience and it takes a lot of, like, just bad work. You know, it takes a lot of bad work. You got to get knocked down and you got to be really patient with the process. Cause sometimes too, like, a really good painting will look really bad for a long time before you can kind of polish it up and actually make it into something beautiful. So don't quit. I'd say keep trying.
Happy keep mistakes, right?
Happy clouds. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Dude, I love that.
Bro, man, it's been a pleasure having you
guys
on here.
It is a joy to talk with you. It's
awesome.
I wanted to talk to you guys for a long time, and this is
and thank
such,
you for my gift.
A good time. Dude, you're welcome.
Yeah, can we?
Oh, you guys want to take a look at
it? Yeah. Babe, why don't you grab it and bring it over? To
how do we do this? Do I get up? Don't move.
Yeah, don't move. We'll catch it on Marcus's camera.
Little bird.
That is freaking awesome.
Oh, thank you. So I painted. Oh, there's a little signature. I'll sign it on the back too, though. So the first trident that I painted, the one I kind of told you guys about, I painted that one. And for this documentary, they were like, hey, do you mind if we like kind of reenact that? Like, could you start to paint a picture of that scene? And so we spent like 45 minutes of me painting it. And I started working on it. I was like, well, I've come this far. I might as well give another crack at it. And so I spent a little bit more time and then you guys reached out and you're like, hey, do you want to come out for the podcast? I was like, I know the perfect place for this painting. And so
I love that.
I got it, man. Dude, I'm so glad it's going to go to a good home.
It's going in here for everyone to see.
Well, don't
see.
Feel pressure. You don't have to
hang
up my stuff just because. Dude, I love this old stuff though. Don't you like the old Frogmen? Have you seen the old Frogmen magazines? Like the comic books? Are you familiar with the Frogmen comics?
As a matter of fact.
Dude, so I got a bunch of those.
You guys got them.
Yeah, you can find them on Etsy every now and then, but dude, they are
that's
like
original.
A treasure. That's sick.
Actually,
like one of the original posters.
You have one of those?
No, but they are awesome. I'll get one eventually.